Case number 15-5009, Trent M. Colburn, Appellant v. John McHugh, Secretary of the Army. Mr. Tony for the appellant, Mr. Grace for the appellate.
Mr. Tony.
Very good morning to the court. My name is Raymond J. Tony and I'm counsel for Mr. Colburn in this appeal. This court previously found that the Army's termination of Mr. Colburn's disability evaluation processing was unfathomable. We're back again going on 4 years later, and Mr. Colburn respectfully submits that the court will find it to be equally unfathomable this time around. Mr. Colburn's theory of the case is very simple, and that is that Dr. Scherner, who served as the Deputy Commander for Clinical Services, who terminated his medical evaluation board process, acted contrary to his authority, which is established by paragraph 7-12 of Army Regulation 4-400. And that regulation states the appointing authority, who was the parties agreed, Dr. Scherner, the appointing authority is also the approving authority for MEB proceedings. He or she will not participate in the proceedings either as a member, witness, consultant, or in any other capacity. The regulation further provides that when that authority is delegated, as it was in this case, to Dr. Scherner, that the same prohibition on involvement in the proceeding applies.
Can I ask just a question? If I fathom the government's argument,
Your Honor,
it is that there is not a board proceeding within the meaning of 712 until there's a board.
That's the Army's contention.
Right. And that there was no board yet appointed here, so there was not yet a board proceeding.
That's the Army's contention, Your
Honor. Okay.
That's entirely contrary to the regulations and also to the facts of the case.
Why is it contrary to this regulation, which says you can't participate in a board proceeding?
It refers to proceedings. So even if the Army's theory of a bifurcated MEB is correct, the language of this applies from the commencement of the MEB process to its conclusion. It doesn't distinguish between an examination phase and the stage where the board has been impaneled. So it encompasses, even if the Army is correct about the impaneling issue, which we don't believe the Army is correct, this regulation still applies. It covers from the time he entered the disability evaluation system, that Dr. Scherner was prohibited from any further involvement in that process.
And what begins, in your theory, what's the triggering event that begins that process?
The referral from the treating physician, Your Honor.
So, again, if I'm fathoming the Army correctly,
Your Honor,
it's the production of the narrative that begins the process.
Well, it's not entirely clear. What they're arguing is that there's an examination phase, which is what Mr. Colburn had entered into. Their position is that a non-member physician conducts the examination and prepares the NARSIM, the narrative summary. That position is untenable because both the DOD instruction that governs and the Army regulations specifically state the NARSIM shall contain the conclusions of the MEB, a finding of whether the person meets retention standards or not, and an explanation of why. So it's illogical to think that the examining physician is charged with coming to the conclusions that are reserved by regulation to the board itself.
Where's the section that you're talking about now, the one that says that the NARSIM includes the results?
I apologize, Your Honor.
That's all right.
Paragraph 7-24E of Army Regulation 40-400.
Okay, say it again. 7-
24E of Regulation
40-400.
And that states an informed opinion, it requires the NARSIM to provide, quote, an informed opinion as to the soldier's ability to meet retention standards, and if the soldier does not meet retention standards, the specific reasons why. So again, utterly illogical.
But where does it say that that is after the MEB reaches its conclusion rather than the narrative setting out?
That is the narrative summary, Your Honor. That's the content of the narrative summary. So the Army's position is that a non-MEB member physician produces that, mm-hmm. comes to those conclusions, supplies that to the MEB physicians, who then either approve or disapprove.
Right.
Now, again,
that's how I understand their position also. And right. Why is that an unreasonable reading of their own regulation?
Because the task of the MEB is to determine whether or not the soldier meets retention standards. That is their primary function. So why is the function assigned to an examining physician?
Well, they're supposed to give their opinion to the MEB physicians, and then the MEB physicians evaluate that. The MEB physicians, do they physically also examine the soldier?
Your Honor, this bifurcation does not exist. That's the whole point. And so I want to take the court away from that. Reading the regulation as it currently stands, the MEB process is informal. The regulation provides that they're not even required to meet. So Physician A gets designated to serve on an MEB. In this case, it was Dr. Lopez. That's Mr. Coburn's position. He was an MEB physician. He's the one who conducted the examination. Had the MEB not been terminated, a second physician would have come on board who would have reviewed the findings that Dr. Lopez produced. They would have reached a decision, produced the NARSIM, and from there it would have gone to Dr. Scherner.
Does your whole case rise and fall on your contention that there was an MEB, that the protections, the priority for MEB over other administrative termination proceedings applies to the MEB process? Do you have a separate ground on which you can prevail, that even if the decision here was made mm-hmm. before the MEB was mm-hmm. convened, as I take the Army to be mm-hmm. contending, that there nonetheless is an arbitrariness in the decision?
Yes, Your Honor, because the medical circumstances which led to his referral to the MEB did not change. Now, the determination to send him to an MEB was concurred in by three physicians.
Why? So what is it in the regulations that prevents the person with authority to make a decision from just changing his mind?
I don't understand the question.
Well, let's assume just hypothetically that the Army is right mm-hmm. that the MEB process had not yet kicked in. And mm-hmm. the question is whether the medical decision here, yes, he's got disability, he should be evaluated by an MEB, oops, actually on second thought, let's not go to that MEB. Mm-hmm. What is the regulation that requires a reason for that second decision? Let's not go to an MEB.
Where that would transpire is before he's referred to the MEB.
Right.
So a soldier typically will, depending on the condition or the disease process, if it's a brain tumor, and it's a terminal brain tumor, there's not a question. If it's a case of diabetes, is it managed by insulin? There's a question. So normally there's a monitoring period, a treatment period, and for Mr. Coburn it was extensive over a period of years. So that's the determination of the treating physician under the regulation. He comes to the conclusion that he or she believes that the person may right. not meet retention right. standards. Then the person is sent to the MEB.
I'm saying if before they're sent to the MEB.
Then the treating physician.
Then the question is the treating physician, let's say MS, we think it's MS, mm-hmm. and then they read a CME article and they see, oh, wow, you know what, I don't think that's MS at all. I think mm-hmm. it's arthritis. And without seeing the person again, without any further testing, they just change their mind. Is there any standard of non-arbitrariness or of medical documentation or anything your view that applies before it actually is referred?
At that point in time, if the soldier is not in the medical evaluation board process, the decision simply is to not refer him or her to the MEB.
Constrain or require non-arbitrariness in that decision?
No, Your Honor, because that's a discretionary call by the treating physician. at that point in time, before the MEB. That's the point. What the regulation...
So I think you've just changed your answer to my prior question. I had asked if your whole case rises and falls on the notion that he was, that Sergeant Coburn was in the MEB process, and that that process is covered by the priority regulation.
If I understand correctly, so the drawing a fine line between pre-MEB and the MEB stage, the treating physician pre-MEB is just a treating physician. So he or she makes a call at a certain point that this person is not going to recover, having issues with duty performance, or depending upon the condition, et cetera. I don't think the person meets retention standards, send to the MEB. The MEB then decides whether the person meets retention
right.
standards
but
or
I
not.
But I think their position is, treating physician says, this person doesn't meet retention standards, got a disability, and then actually, on second thought, no, he does meet retention standards. And I take you to be saying, that's fine if he hasn't been sent to the MEB.
That's right.
They can do that on for any reason or no reason at all. Even if the medical documentation says, this person has a disability, they can sort of wake up one morning and say, no, actually, in my medical judgment, no. They don't
That's
have
correct.
A disability. Let's not go the MEB route.
And that happens. That's
what,
is,
what do you mean by sent to the MEB?
That means referred.
What
there's
does that mean? What's the formal version of that?
In this case, the regulations, this is a very informal ad hoc process, so
yeah.
The regulations are not overly specific. The referral, it comes from either a physician or a commanding officer.
Yeah.
Can also, strike that. The commanding officer can suspect that the person doesn't meet retention standards, send them
is
to a doctor.
Is a referral done by a letter
so
or something?
It's done by the treating physician.
By a letter or something?
Normally by a letter, by a memorandum.
Is that what happened in this case?
It's happened in this case.
So, the minute after the letter is sent, is there already a MEBD as far as you're concerned?
I think the moment that the treatment facility receives the letter and says, we're docketing this, however that happens in their personnel system. And in this case...
But in that, I just want to, in that circumance, you believe it's the process is ready to begin,
and
even if another doctor hasn't been appointed to the board?
Well, at that case, neither physician has been appointed to
and
the board.
And even so, you think the process is
ready? The process has begun.
So imagine that the referring physician looks at the wrong x-ray. He actually looks at Mr. X and not Mr. Coburn. He sends it, and the nurse runs in and says, doctor, you've looked at the wrong x-ray. That's, you know, somebody completely different. Here's the correct x-ray. Nothing's broken.
Mm-hmm.
He can't pull it back? Is that?
He can't. This is not an onerous burden, even though the Army...
But I just want to be clear. Can't pull it back.
No,
all right,
not
so
according to
the
regulation.
Can you help me with some of the words of some of these regulations?
Yes,
so,
sir.
635.40.4-10 says, MEBDs are convened to document a soldier's medical status. What does convened mean? The government's position, as I understand it, is that two doctors are appointed. That's what convened means. What do you think convened means?
The terms are not consistently used throughout the regulations.
Yeah.
To answer your question, Your Honor, what it means is that a doctor is notified. This is my understanding of what happened. I've represented quite a number of soldiers and individuals from other military services in the disability evaluation process. I will say I have never seen an order in an MEB package convening the MEB members or authorizing the two MEB members to serve, including one with the Army that I currently have from the Court of Federal Claims. So I'm not sure the process is as specific as we would like for it to be.
Well, the description I'm giving is the one that the Surgeon General and the Army Physical Disability Agency describes.
And when he uses
so
the term,
if I have to decide between what you just said, which is sort of your anecdotes, which I don't demean, they may well be correct, and two units that deal with this all the time. I would have to say substantial evidence supports that. It supports the position, even if you have contrary anecdotes. Isn't that right?
Well, the Brower, the advisory opinion from the Army Physical Disability Agency says an MEB is not an active board per se, but is only two physicians who are chosen.
Yeah. So they have to be chosen.
But in responding to your question about
what this... It actually says chosen after the exam and narrative summary is completed.
And that is incorrect.
Okay, but so when you say it's incorrect, from a practice point of view, I don't think you can win. You can, because we have two different sides on this, and their side is enough for substantial evidence. The question is really whether the regulations can be reasonably read.
Right.
And given that we have a regulation that says convened, give me another meaning of convened that makes their meaning an unreasonable one.
The convened means that they are selected to serve on the board,
right,
which probably happens via email to the physicians.
Okay, so they say there's no evidence that anybody was convened. You think there was a board convened? You think people were selected here?
Certainly Dr. Lopez was.
But there have to be two of them. So what do you think two of them were?
I don't know if a second was or not. I don't know if there was another physician who was in the wings.
So do you agree? Let me follow up. Do you agree that two have to be selected one way or the other before an MEBD is convened?
I don't believe that both physicians, no, have to be appointed, selected, or chosen for an MEB to convene. The process starts, again, when the military treatment facility says, it receives the referral, assigns a counselor, which happened in this case, and that starts the MEB process, the proceedings, if you will. I don't know, and the record doesn't tell us what you have in terms of what I'm offering as conjecture. You have the unsupported assertions of this advisory opinion doesn't have any reference to the regulation to support his position. And I pointed out in our briefing numerous reasons why that position is an untenable position and is not worthy of deference.
And what do you say, the other regulation that I'm focusing on is 40-400-71, which says MEB processing will not normally exceed 30 days beginning on the date of the medical officer's narrative summary.
Correct.
So that does sound like the summary is the kickoff. Doesn't it?
No, that means that they're going to complete, if I can read 7-.
It's 7-1.
Uh-huh. MEB appointments, consultation will receive priority access for
duty-related
cases will not normally exceed 30 days beginning on the date medical officer's narrative summary forwarded to the PEB. So when the NARSM is provided to the PEB, 30 days is the deadline.
The deadline for?
For the PEB processing of the case. Forgive me. From the beginning,
it says MEB processing will not, and that's what we're talking about, MEB processing,
right,
will not normally exceed 30 days beginning at the date of the medical officer's narrative summary.
Right.
So that sounds like MEB processing begins on the date of the medical officer's narrative summary, which is the government's position here.
I think that's referring to the narrative summary that's prepared by the MEB. And so MEB process will not normally exceed 30 days. So I think the intent of that is that once the NARSM is completed, they need to get it to the physical evaluation board within 30 days.
Right. But I think what the chief judge is pointing out is that at least implicitly, almost explicitly, defines MEB processing. And so MEB processing there is defined as starting at point A, medical officer's narrative summary, and ending at point B, referral to the physical evaluation board. And that question is, why isn't that support for the military's reading? That processing begins with the NARSM.
Your Honor, I'm not sure how to answer the question other than if we look at what was remanded to the board by the court the first time around, the question was, the Army's position at that point was that an MEB had been initiated, but he hadn't been referred, so the MEB had not been commenced. Therefore, the treating physician was able to withdraw it.
I wanted to circle back on the colloquy that you and I had before. Is it your view that if a soldier has been referred for an MEB, but the MEB has not yet been impaneled, mm-hmm, that during that period, The officer with authority, and here that would be Mr. Scherner, can terminate the MEV for any reason or no reason at all?
No, no, Your Honor.
And what is your authority for saying no?
The authority is paragraph 7-12 of Army Regulation 40-400. He was the appointing authority slash approving authority. And that paragraph explicitly addresses what his authorities are, what his role is, and what the limitations are. And the prohibition is participation in the proceedings.
And you're primarily also relying on 635-200-133 that's giving that process priority, right, over other administrative processes.
The MEB, the disability process.
Yeah.
Correct, Your Honor. I think that the parties in the court were all in agreement last time around that his disability took precedence over any other.
Right. The question is he in the disability so that he gets the benefit of that precedence? Right. That's the big picture.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's what the advisory opinions concluded, and that's what the ABCMR also concluded. Now, sort of one of the obvious points, there's a lot of discussion about the termination of the MEB. It's used by the ABCMR, it's used by the Army in their briefing, and it's also used in the advisory opinions. How can you terminate an MEB if the MEB did not exist? So that clearly is evidence that the process had started. So going back to 7-12, I think the question for the court is then, how broad or how narrow is the restriction from in paragraph 7-12? It states proceedings. It doesn't state, if the Army's theory were correct, that regulation would have been written to state that the appointing authority can terminate the process at any point in time. Soldier has no rights to appeal prior to the impaneling or the convening of the MEB. It does not state that. And there are a host of other regulations which we address in the rebuttal, for example, the rights of appeal. What happens to the rights of appeal in this process? If the Army is correct, what standard did Dr. Scherner use to terminate the process? Did he find that he met retention standards? Where is he authorized to make that determination? That's the determination for the MEB.
Well, that would fit. I appreciate you think the place on the line is a different place, but since you agree that before the doctor sends the referral, the doctor could change his mind for any reason, because it's up to his discretion. The argument would be that before the board is impaneled, these other rules don't apply, and so he can pull it back in the exercise of his discretion without an appeal, in the same way he could have decided in his office not to send it in the first place. That would have to be the argument.
And that's also what the board concluded. Dr. Caicedo, the treating physician, had no authority to terminate the MEB. The position of the ABCMR is that Dr. Scherner had that authority as the appointing approving authority. And the reasons, there's some logic to their, or they use logic, but it's also purely speculative in terms of what they fundamentally based their opinion on. Neither of the advisory opinions stated that Dr. Scherner had the authority to do what he did.
Okay, further questions?
I have one other question. If a physician is referring to an MEB, can there be such a referral on a basis other than those enumerated under an AR 4-501? In other words, there is this long list of enumerated conditions, and the Army puts a lot of emphasis on documentation that does not say that there's a herniated disc, but maybe just bulging disc. And the question is there, if a doctor thought there was a bulging disc situation that was very disabling, is that a permissible condition for referral to an MEB or not?
My recollection is they could refer him for back pain, for chronic back pain, and that also provides a rating once they get to the physical evaluation board stage. They assign a disability rating. So back pain is a rateable condition. So my understanding, Your Honor, and I'd be happy to get back to the court with the specifics, is the answer to your question is yes. But generally, the list being very comprehensive, those are the conditions. I don't know if there is a medical condition, if there's something that comes up, a new type of disease diagnosis, Not sure how that would work, Your Honor. Maybe the Army could help you with that. Thank you very much.
With that cue, we'll turn to the Army.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, I am Derek Race, Special Assistant United States Attorney for the District of Columbia, and I'm here representing the Secretary of the Army. In this case, the position of the Army is that the MEB, as we've talked about a lot, the MEB had not been formally impaneled. There was no actual MEB proceeding, per se, at the time that the appointing authority terminated the process, so to say. How did we get there? The Army Disability Agency provided documentation to advisory opinion to the ABCMR in its determination. This is based on questions that this court had prior and returned the questions along with the case to the ABCMR in order to go through those questions and those concerns that the court had in order to...
Just to be clear, it is, as I described to your opposing counsel and as he also thought the government's position was, that until the MEB is impaneled, and I take it the government's position about impaneled or convened, I guess is the better word, is that two doctors are appointed. Until that happens, we're not yet in the MEB proceeding process. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. Until there's an MEB, there's not an MEB, I guess would be.
So, you heard me talk about several regulations with opposing counsel. Are those the regulations on which the government relies for that view? Are there some other regulations? Have I picked the wrong regulations or the right regulations or what?
Your Honor, these are the correct regulations. On top of that, the ABCMR and the district court relied on the advisory opinions from the Army Surgeon General's Office, as well as the Army Physical Disability Agency, which are those agencies that run the process, both the process itself as well as the doctors who are impaneled to review these cases.
So if it's the case that this process or proceeding hasn't begun, didn't begin in this case yet, right?
There was no MEB proceeding.
Yeah. Why is it that the referring doctor couldn't on his own simply pull it back?
Your Honor, the referring, so if you look at 635-40, paragraph 4-9, as well as the Army Physical Disability Agency's comments, the referring physician loses authority once it's referred. So as the Army Physical Disability Agency stated and on Joint Appendix 200, the initiation or referral, because it's the same thing, by the treating physician in this case, merely means that the medical treatment facility gains control and the case is assigned to have the physician complete a medical examination and narrative summary for inclusion in the MEB.
I'm sorry, which, what are you reading from?
Sorry, paragraph 2B of JA 200, the advisory opinion.
Yeah,
from
I was asking, is there, I see you're looking at 4-9.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there somewhere, that's what you're relying on for the proposition that once there's a referral,
yes, Your Honor. If so,
it's not the commander's responsibility.
I'm sorry?
Thereafter, it's the MTF commander's responsibility. Is that the point?
So the question is, what does referral mean? Yeah. The appellant counsel believes that referral, once it's gone, it's gone. It's started down the road of an MEB.
Yeah.
However, the referral from a physician or under 4748, referral from a commander merely means that it's the responsibility has been transferred over to the appointment authority. And then 4-9 states that the commander, the appointment authority in this case, the appointing authority will conduct an examination of a soldier referred for evaluation.
In this case, that's Scherner. That's the MTO.
Yes, Your Honor.
And does, once we're at that stage in the process, whether you characterize it as the MEB having been convened or not, and I understand there's quite a disagreement on that, but assuming your position is correct, that there's no MEB that's been convened, is there nonetheless some requirement of a non-arbitrary reason for the MTF to decide to disband, countermand the referral, stop the process?
But, Your Honor, there's nothing in the regulation that says that. It's a independent, I mean, it's a discretionary decision by a doctor to is whether the soldier has a condition that appears to make him not medically qualified to perform his duties.
Is that what it has based on, whether the soldier is not medically qualified to perform his duties?
In the physician's opinion, yes, Your Honor.
Now, what supports the decision of Dr. Scherner in this case that Sergeant Coburn was medically qualified to perform his duties? Is that just Mr. Caicedo's declaration?
No, Your Honor. So the I think it's important to understand that we're reviewing the ABCMR decision for arbitrary capriciousness, which is a different level of scrutiny than the doctor. So the doctor reviewed the file, obviously, because when he reviewed the file, he said he informed that there was a pulmonary issue that was found, and he wanted to make sure that there was no issues there prior to terminating the referral to the MEB. So that right there indicates that it wasn't an arbitrary decision by the appointment authority. But the ABCMR's decision is really what's in front of the court now, which not only looks at Dr. Caicedo, the medical records that were available to it, but also, as it states in its decision, that it looks at what is the evaluations, because the idea is, what was there a condition that hindered this person from performing his duties? So they look at the evaluation reports close in time to after the initial injury, I believe in 1999. They looked at those evaluations and found that he was performing the duties commensurate with his rank and positions. So there was no referral from the commander before the there was no referral at all from a commander saying that he had an unfitting condition. In fact, he was a platoon sergeant. He fulfilled duties as a first sergeant at times.
I find this record somewhat confusing.
Yes, sir.
And I'm sure you can help me out. I have, as a one data point, the physical report by Dr. Caicedo, signed off by two other medical professionals.
Yes, sir.
On June 28th, 2002, in which Dr. Caicedo says that there's a permanent restriction on Sergeant Coburn's ability to do the job. He can't run, jump, march, or do sit-ups. And it says he's not a surgical candidate at this time. And that then is a source of, I believe, referral toward the MEB. And the question is there anything after that, any medical documentation of any kind that explains why that is either changed or error?
Any medical doc, the issues, as the ABCMR says, there is longstanding and recognizes there's longstanding medical issues by the appellant. However, the appellant in receiving his referral to the appointment authority, when it was discovered that he was already pending separation was when Dr. Casito relooked at his medical records, and the ABCMR points this out that that's significant, not because of any nefarious reason that the appellant gives him. However, the issue is that under the regulations, under the appropriate regulations, if the soldier is able to perform his duties pending separation, up until point of separation, there is a presumption that he is fit for duty.
Right.
So then he looks at those medical records in a different light under that presumption and understands now that he was scheduled for separation.
So the evidence that he is performing his duties, notwithstanding Dr. Quesada's determination on June 28th, is what? The evidence that he's nonetheless, as of that date and thereafter, performing his duties is what?
So as the ABCMR points out, the evaluation reports are an important factor in that. If you look at 635-40, addendum 9, paragraph 3C.
Can you give me a JA site?
It's addendum 9 to the plaintiff's brief. Yes, Your Honor. In that
government addendum page
9. Sorry, the appellant's argument.
I don't think I'm looking at what you're asking me to look at. That's a regulation.
Okay, so it's the regulation 635-40, paragraph 3.1, part C.
Right.
Okay. About halfway down this part C, it says a soldier may be referred for physical evaluation under other circumstances, meaning other circumstances other than what was talked about earlier, which is acute trauma, that sort of thing, that required hospitalization. If so, evaluations of the performance of duty by supervisors may provide better evidence than a clinical estimate by the duties of the office, grade, rank, or rating. Thus, if the evidence establishes the fact that the soldier adequately performed the normal duties of his or her office, grade, rank, or rating until the time of referral, the physical evaluation of the soldier might be considered fit for duty. So that's something that the ABCMR considered, the non-commissioned officer evaluation reports. Not to mention the only mention of any duty-limiting condition that the soldier had in his non-commissioned officer evaluation reports is in the final one, well after, it was just about June 2002, which is well after the appeal of his separation was denied. In the regulation also states that that any duty limitation, the commander should reference any duty limitation in the non-commissioned officer evaluation report, which was not done at all.
Okay, you're a little bit ahead of me.
Sorry.
Where in the ABCMR decision does the board rely on the regulation that you just pointed me to, subsection C of Chapter 3?
Here, I'm... I'm not sure where it specifically refers to that subsection. However, it does refer to the non-commissioned officer the evaluation reports close in time in JA 65, paragraph 12.
Right. Despite the unsigned statement from Captain K indicating duties were restricted, the applicant's recent NCOER indicated the applicant was performing his assigned duties. That's not really dealing with also the signed statement from the medical doctor saying that his duties were restricted. And then it's a little hard to figure out why for, I mean, I guess the basic question that we've been dealing with since the prior panel was dealing with this case. I thought the point of AR 635-200, 1-33, is to create protection for service members once they're in medical channels.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's the term that they use, medical channels. Requiring that that process should run its course and not be trumped by an administrative separation proceeding, such as this one under the quality management program, mm-hmm. pursuant to Chapter 19. So there's a cross-reference in there. And the position of the Army is that that protection is not applicable here, even though he's in medical channels, that once they realize, well, actually what we really want to do is separate this man under the quality management program. He's not performing like he once was. And the fact, now we're going to look at the baseline, instead of performing duties, we're going to say, well, he's going to be retired, he'll be fine. But I thought the point of this was, that's not the baseline. You don't say, you know, oh, this disabled soldier, he's going to be fine because he's not going to be doing his duties anymore. You have to ask, can he do his duties? And Dr. Quesada, with two other doctors signing off, said no. And then Dr. Quesada says, oh, you want to get rid of him under the QMP? Oh, I didn't realize that. Fine, then I changed my mind. And why is that permissible this regulation?
I guess Dr. Quesada has limited relevance at this stage, given that the decision is not his. It is the appointing authority's decision at this point. And as
Schirner.
Yes.
And the information Schirner had, though, about this individual's medical condition was provided to him by Dr. Quesada.
Right? Just the medical record in general from 99 on regarding his back issues. Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
I mean, not just Dr. Quesada, but the history of all the MRIs that were done, all the medical follow-ups that were done, the fact that he didn't have a medical profile from March of 2000 until February of 2002, once the separation was supposed to take an effect. And he did have these protections. He was supposed to be separated in April of 2002. However, he obviously was not at that point because he was going through the medical channels. Because he was referred to the medical evaluation board. And so once Dr. Schirner, the appointment authority, reviewed the records, he had that authority to say, no, I don't believe that he has a duty limitation. He has obviously longstanding back issues. So it's Dr. Schirner's decision that's relevant here, not Dr. Quesada's.
Dr. Schirner's decision based on the record.
Based on the medical record.
So if Dr. Schirner has to make a non-arbitrary decision based on the record evidence, right?
Yes. I mean, he has to make a judgment call as a doctor and as a medical officer in the United States Army as to whether initial call, whether there appeared to be a duty-limiting physical issue.
Okay. And is there any evidence that he was considering the back condition? He does refer, he says, let's not terminate this, let's refer for a pulmonary evaluation. He does that. Anything, any information that he took into account the back condition?
Obviously the decisions by Dr. Schirner were not set up for review by a circuit court. However, I think that given the nature of his decision that Dr. Quesada went to him and said, hey, I don't think this guy warrants the MEB. And he said, well, hold on a minute. Let me, you know, I think it's obvious, while there's no something I can point to physically, it's obvious that he looked at the profile. Otherwise, he wouldn't have even known about the pulmonary issue in the first place, and it was the pulmonary issue, not the back issue, that caused him pause to not go forward with the medical evaluation. Once that was determined to be resolved, then that's when he said it was okay to terminate. He terminated the process.
And what's your response? I had asked Sergeant Coburn's counsel, what's your response to whether a physician can refer to an MEB when the physician believes the condition makes him unfit for duty if the diagnosis is not among those listed in AR-4-501?
I'm also not positive about that. I would imagine if there was any duty limiting, the list in 40-501 is massive, for lack of a better word. And so chronic lower back pain, actually I believe osteoarthritis, which he was diagnosed with, could be. Again, those are all subject to the duty limitation issue. So it is likely that if there was some medical issue that hindered him from performing his duties, something in 40-501 could be found to support.
So the sine qua non of the whole thing is duty hindrance, duty interference.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there duty interference here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Or not? And it doesn't, you think it's neither here nor there that Dr. Quesada, in one of the documents that was supporting the underlying board judgment here, says he would no longer be performing military work, such as running or sit-ups, and could limit his marching and lifting as a civilian. So there's no need for an MEB. Is that correct reasoning in your view? Or if it's not correct reasoning, is it immaterial that it's?
I think it's immaterial, Your Honor. Again, Dr. Quesada wasn't the one making the decision. I think it's immaterial at this point. And it was Dr. Scherner's decision to terminate the process that's important. And Dr. Quesada's comments 7 years later regarding that are shouldn't be given much weight.
And where Dr. Quesada says, and I'm on JA-169, our reasons for terminating Mr. Coburn's MEB were, are these not the authoritative reasons?
Certainly that was his reason.
And that's the reason that the Army proffered in the process, no? I mean, that was a witness chosen by the Army. Right?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor.
And so he declined the option for surgery. He had said that he wasn't actually a candidate for surgery previously.
Now, the documents that were pointed at by the appellant counsel, one of them was from 99 saying he wasn't a surgical candidate. One was from 2000 saying he wasn't a surgical candidate.
And one is the most recent time Dr. Quesada saw him, which is 2002.
Is the profile itself.
Yeah, and it's not a surgical candidate at this time, MEB initiated.
He was referred out for a surgical evaluation, I believe, in March of 2000. I don't have the site, I'm afraid. And I could not find what the result of that was. So Dr. Caicedo's comment in the profile, I don't know if that means he's not a surgical candidate because he refused, so he's not a surgical candidate, so we're going to put a profile on him because he's not going to go through surgery, or if that's like a medical diagnosis. It's just in the medical profile, so it's not really a medical diagnosis.
There's no doctor in any of all these examinations at any time in this record that says, here's an individual who could benefit from surgery. Nobody said that.
That's correct, Your Honor. But that would go toward the fact that surgery wasn't necessary.
Right, but
because
they're saying
it was being
he declined surgery as if that's a reason to terminate. But I'm not sure it's a reason for anything. They said surgery wouldn't help him. Here's a man who's disabled. Surgery wouldn't help him. And he was in great pain, couldn't do his job. And then, you want to get rid of him under the QEB. Actually, he can do his job. There's no pain. We don't have any documentation supporting that shift. That's the question I'm asking you, is if you can give me documentation supporting that shift, I'm interested in it.
Okay.
Or supporting why Dr. Quesada is just not the one to be trusted here. And I don't see any determination to that effect by Dr. Scherner. Dr. Quesada doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm going to look at this other stuff.
Remember, Dr. Scherner, so Dr. Quesada's comments in his in the profile, I believe it was 28 June 2002.
Yes.
After that was when the physical evaluation that formed the basis under 4-9 for Dr. Scherner's decision. So under 4-9, it states that the appointment of, saying appointment authority, so NTF commander, because it's the appointment authority, will conduct an examination of a soldier referred for evaluation. And as the physical disability agency said, that is the same as that would eventually go were an MEB to actually occur. And then if it appears after that evaluation that the soldier is not medically qualified to perform the duty, he will refer the soldier to the MEB. So
you're talking about Scherner's evaluation?
No, Your Honor, I'm talking about Dr. Lopez's evaluation.
Okay.
So that the concept of that medical evaluation is to inform the decision of the appointment authority. And he had the benefit of that when he made his conclusion to terminate the proceeding.
That's a good question about the surgery. On JA 988, paragraph D, it says, on March 27, Mr. Coburn saw the neurosurgeon. The neurosurgeon offered surgery as a potential corrective measure. However, Mr. Coburn declined this surgery. Doesn't that not indicate that the neurosurgeon thought he was a candidate for surgery? Whatever, if candidate has some medical meaning rather than some other kind of meaning.
Yes, Your Honor. I just could not find that in the – I could not find the documentation.
I understand, but we do – there is an affidavit in the record. How much weight we give it may be another question, but there is an affidavit in the record.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Further questions?
I have one question just about the operation of the MEB or maybe when it's initiated.
Yes, Your Honor.
As I understand, Mr. Tony referred a couple of times to this being an informal and somewhat ad hoc procedure and said, you know, the MEB is not convened like this court is convened. So they can be appointed, and they might be appointed at different times. They don't have to meet. They can evaluate this, I guess, separately and come to a conclusion. That being the case, if one doctor is appointed, but the other one is not yet appointed, do we have an MEB, or does it depend on the narrative summary?
Your Honor, I guess the answer to the question, the hypothetical, is that in this case, Dr. Lopez was performing a medical evaluation.
Okay. And would he have been one of the two doctors?
Doctors aren't chosen
okay.
or appointed until certainly after the medical evaluation and is complete, and the appointment authority decides to refer the case to an actual MEB. I conceivably he could later be chosen, but at that point he's not appointed as.
Yeah, I'm just asking. Suppose someone had been appointed specifically. You know, we want you to do this evaluation, but you didn't have the second doctor. Would this process have begun?
So if there was an incomplete appointment for it,
I don't know.
Certainly not something that was contemplated by the ABCMR, Your Honor. I'm not sure what the answer would be from the ABCMR's. And the agency's construct, because in this case, there was no appointment because the appointment is done according to the Army Physical Disability Agency and the regulations after the NARSM is completed.
So I have just a couple more record questions.
Yes,
Sergeant Coburn was on administrative duties for many months. It was about a six-month period, I think, in 01. And I assume from June 2001 to January 2002, from February to July of 2002, he's on administrative duties. And presumably that's because he can't do the more strenuous active duty?
Yeah, there's no indication that that's why he was on administrative duties. I mean, he is a senior non-commissioned officer in a company and a brigade, I think a battalion and a brigade at that time. So the senior non-commissioned officers in those positions would be performing administrative duties, certainly. Somebody has to do it, and if, sort of, for instance, the brigade operations emergency non-commissioned officer is a senior non-commissioned officer. So he's performing duties commensurate with his rank.
And the NCOER that was negative on him, was that related or unrelated to the Article 15?
That would be related to the Article 15.
So the thing that was negative, the negative on his record was that he was had been charged with marijuana use.
Right, that he was found guilty at an Article 15 proceeding.
Right, and then it was found that there wasn't preponderance of the evidence to support that, but they nonetheless kept it in place, I guess.
Well, those are two different proceedings, Your Honor.
Right.
One is the two different proceedings, so they don't really affect each other. The result was that he was found to have THC, marijuana, in his system. It's not really relevant,
right,
to these proceedings because the circuit court decided before that the
QMP
basis for the
quality,
right, QMP and everything was not challenged, so the basis in the Article 15 also was not challenged. So while that's true, I don't see the relevance here.
And this is my last question. We don't have anything in the record telling us what Schirner relied on.
Your Honor, nothing.
Or
the only thing in the record.
Or even what he reviewed.
Well, is that, maybe I'm just reading a different record on this, but on the one hand, you have JA 228 signed by Schirner, in which Casito says, this case has been discussed with the DCCS at Schirner, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he's approved my request. And then you have the declaration at JA 990 of Casito saying, these are our reasons for, he first says, I discussed Coburn's case with Schirner, and this,
yes,
is, these are our reasons, and lists four of them. So they may not, how much weight we give this or not, I don't know, but there is something in the record that says what was discussed, at least what was discussed with Schirner and what he agreed with, right?
Yes, Your Honor, the medical records and obviously the medical evaluation.
Okay. So you would read that as Dr. Schirner effectively incorporating by reference the reasons that Quesada articulates as our reasons?
As far as, yes, that's Dr. Caicedo's memory of that conversation. Yes, sir. All right.
Okay.
Nothing else? Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Does Mr. Coburn have, Mr. Tony have any time? We'll give you another minute also.
To your questions about his duty performance, he hadn't performed his military occupational specialty duties for approximately 2 years. There was a three-month period where he did. So basically for the last 2 years of his service in the Army, he was operating as an administrative person, and those were not his principal duties, and that's one of the criteria that the Army looks at in terms of whether the person should be continued in the Army or sent into the disability evaluation system. Very briefly, to the point about whether this MEB was underway, the Army Board for the Correctional Military Records at JA 62, paragraph 3, states, while the referring physician had the authority to withdraw his referral, he did not have the authority to stop the applicant's medical examinations and processing under the MEB by itself. Evidence that they understood that the MEB was underway. JA-63, also paragraph 6, likewise, the DCCS was responsible for overseeing the overall MEB process and, as such, had the authority to terminate the process if he also believed the applicant's condition did not warrant referral to an MEB. There are additional references in the ABCMR's decision indicating that they concluded that the MEB had been commenced.
I'm confused. So JA-64 in the same document you're talking about says the records do not indicate that any physicians were appointed to an MEB or that an MEB had convened. Essentially, the appointing authority determined it was not necessary to appoint physicians and convene an MEB.
On the point, there's a contradiction in the board's decision.
Well, you have a very clear and flat statement. You have what may be a little ambiguous early on, but this seems like a pretty clear statement that it wasn't convened. And more, I mean, it doesn't even seem like it. It is a clear statement that it wasn't convened.
My interpretation is what I was explaining earlier, that the MEB commenced, the process commenced, for the purposes of 7-12, certainly, that the appointment of the MEB doctors is not the trigger for the existence of the MEB. Also in that paragraph, that it necessarily follows that DCCS has the authority not to appoint. Of course, there's no discussion of that in the regulations at all. So he was within his scope of authority to terminate the process after the evaluations indicated. That's speculation. We don't know what Dr. Scherner's position was. Dr. Scherner, to the best of my knowledge, never saw Mr. Coburn. Dr. Caicedo had not evaluated Mr. Coburn personally since June of that year. He returned from duty on the 29th of October. He had been in the field, comes into his office 29th, and then Mr. Coburn, on the 30th, he decides that the MEB can be terminated. He coordinates with Dr. Scherner. The MEB is terminated. Mr. Coburn is discharged the very same day. That's an extraordinary event, Your Honor.
Okay. We'll take the matter under submission if you give us a brief recess.